Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
If you're going to the Caps game, they play the Canadiens tonight. Game 2, best of 7 series, Capital One Arena. Your pregame stop in Penn Quarter right by the arena for drinks and food. City Tap House, Penn Quarter. That's where we are. We're going to be here until 6:30 with listeners.
We are Grant and Danny, and this is the show that's brought to you by our friends, the law firm of Condori and Morod. They can help you draft your last will, testament, set up a living trust, put together a medical power of attorney, whatever you need. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That is kmlawyers.com.
By the way, we're a traveling roadshow.
Seriously.
We got a little Barnum and Bailey Circus thing going on this week. You and I, I'll be the, I don't want to do anything high in the air. I'll be the motorcycler in the ball.
I'll be the trapeze guy.
You could do the, you could train the tigers and like do that kind of thing.
No, the trapeze don't bite.
Although, you know, they got rid of all the animals in the circus. That ricks me. I'm sure someone's mad at me for saying that. But I want elephants and tigers and lions and stuff.
I feel like a zoo could do that. Wouldn't the zoo do that for you?
But it's, yeah. But
oh, you see them do stuff.
The zoo, they're not, you know, doing like standing up and raising their hand and waving at me and whatnot. Tomorrow, you and I have a draft party. We're going to be at MGM National Harbor, Tap Sports Bar, watching the first round. And then Friday, we're heading out west a bit. We're going out to Chantilly to Pupitella Pizza. Only the most delicious, wonderful pizza.
So good.
In the area. Pupitella Pizza Friday for our field trip with listeners ahead of what's going to be Game 3 for the Caps and the Canadians on the road. The Nationals and the Mets have a series with Juan Soto back in town for Game 1. And the NFL Draft for Rounds 2 and 3. So going to be an awesome next few days on Grant and Danny. But let's go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning in the DMV, and bring on to the show a draft expert who's going to give us some insight on what Washington's going to do at number 29. Arif Hassan joins us now. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes. We really appreciate it. We know you're busy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Doing great, very buddy. Well. So what we were saying last hour is that Shedeur Sanders is kind of the pivot point right now. But it seems to be becoming increasingly obvious that he's going to fall a bunch. Is that how you see this, or do you think he still could go 3 or 9 or 21?
Yeah, I don't see him going around 3. I think there's an outside possibility that he goes 9. But certainly, you know, a lot of people are pinging him to the Steelers at 21. That's been like a conversation over the past week. And I'm a little bit surprised. I see him as a better quarterback prospect than that. But I know that a lot of people, you know, have been talking about the way the league has kind of interpreted him. And it doesn't have anything to do with the amount of attention he gets or Deion Sanders or anything like that. And they, in fact, like Shedeur a lot as a mature locker room leader and a hard worker. But it's just that there's not really a trump card for him. Like with Cam Ward, you have, you know, this outstanding arm and a lot of physical ability, but with Shedeur you don't have as much in terms of his athleticism, in terms of his arm, and he's not quite accurate enough to just be kind of that pocket passer that everyone loves. Now, I think that he's a really good quarterback. He deserves to be kind of a top 10 pick, and I could still see it, but it very much seems like the rest of the league doesn't see him the same way. Still kind of just a tier below Cam Ward, still a first-round guy, but closer to that 20s area, and certainly where he goes will kind of define the rest of the draft for a lot of people.
Wide left football, Arif Hassan. So to double-click on that, what's your reaction today to some of these betting markets who have him favored to go in round 2? Like, why is that happening?
Betting markets are usually very good at identifying, you know, things where there's a lot of data and things where there's a lot of people betting. They're not really very good at this kind of specific, you know, who's going to go where in the draft, who's going to run what in the 40. They're notoriously bad at identifying trade targets and free agency. That's not a big deal to me. I know that betting markets, for example, had Will Levis going top 10, right? Like these are just, people are just responding. There's reasons that there are like strict limits on how much you can bet on these draft props and stuff like that. To me, it's not that big a deal.
So Arif, if it's not Shedeur Sanders, where's kind of the flashpoint or the fork in the road in this draft here for you? If things go more chalky than maybe someone like me are anticipating.
Yeah, I mean, it might even be as high as 5. I know that for the past couple of days, a lot of people have been talking about identifying Mason Graham to the Jacksonville Jaguars, which certainly a strong possibility that there's a good fit there. The team, it sounds like, does like him. But the more I'm hearing out of Jacksonville, the less it seems like they even want to pick there. They might want to trade down. And they're okay kind of losing a chance at grabbing Mason Graham if that happens, and that'll change everything if they trade out, right? So if you've got, you know, maybe say the Jets trade up to get Armand Membo or even Kelvin Banks, you know, it is possible that the rest of the draft looks completely different if you don't take that defensive tackle there. You could see, you know, players like cornerback Will Johnson get pushed down, players that, you know, you would expect to go a little bit higher kind of moving into different areas. I ran a simulation where exactly that thing happened, and we saw, you know, luckily for Washington, we saw some edge rushers kind of fall down a little bit further than the draft than you'd expect. And so that kind of area at number five is, I think, pretty big. Where Ashton Gentry goes is going to be big, so that there's a lot of steam right now that the Bears might be trading up into the top 10, one of the few teams that's been rumored to actually want to trade up instead of down. And my estimate is that that would be for someone like an Ashton Gentry. And if they do that, that also alters the shape of the draft. But if they don't, then you've got some question marks like, is he going to go to the Raiders at seven, or what's going to happen there? So I think that's kind of where we start seeing the shape of the draft, you know, kind of take form.
Who's the guy that's going to fall? I know that's it's always such a subjective thing. I actually hate the term, just as a quick editorial, because like no one's been selected yet. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's just based on prognostications, right, and a couple of guys' mock drafts, and they know, you know, a little bit more than we do. But who's somebody that folks think is going to go high that isn't in your mind?
To me, somebody like a Walter Nolan could be that kind of guy. I know that, you know, earlier in the year he'd been projected as potentially top 10. I know that right now he's not necessarily projected top 10. But I think kind of the locker room-ish concerns about him, you know, he would quit practices when he's frustrated and leave. He had an opportunity to prove that that's not who he was at the Senior Bowl. He ended up leaving during practices then. He's not that great against the run. He's kind of a pure pass rusher, but his production wasn't really as high as you'd expect a pure pass rusher to be. And so he has all the athletic potential in the world, but you know, there are a lot of athletes without a ton of production that people like Shamar Stewart. But I think in order for that kind of player to succeed, you need to be really assured that the kind of player that you're getting is one that's going to work hard to kind of fix their problems. And so while everyone knows about, like, legitimate off-field problems for, say, Isaiah Bond and Mike Green, there's these smaller concerns that don't rise to the level of, say, criminality that still impact, you know, the way that people perceive these players just in terms of how much they can get out of them. So I think, you know, Walter Nolan could be that kind of guy. Certainly I think Matthew Golden might be that kind of guy because, you know, a lot of people like his combine, but my understanding is that teams, their hand timing at his combine wasn't as good as the 4.29, and so they may not see him the same way that a lot of other people do.
Arif Hassan on the NFL draft, which gets underway tomorrow. Grant and Danny here on The Fan from City Tap House in D.C. Take us through the edges and where you could see them landing in the first round. Washington very much wants one, it seems like, at 29. Who could be left for them?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably not going to see Jalen Walker there, although I could potentially see him falling because a lot of people don't know what his NFL position is going to be. You're probably not going to see Shamar Stewart. A lot of people have connected him to San Francisco. That'll be kind of interesting. And so from there, you're kind of asking, is Mykal Williams going to be there? Is Mike Green somebody that you're comfortable, you know, grabbing, given kind of all the information out there about him? Certainly, he's a very talented player. If you're comfortable, here's another player that you're concerned maybe about his practice habits, James Pierce. If you're comfortable with him, I know that Atlanta has been connected to him. So those are probably the guys that you're paying the most attention to. One of them could fall. Certainly Mykal Williams is a good example of somebody that might fall a little bit because I heard somebody brought a Jermaine Johnson comp for him. I don't fully agree with that, but I get where they're coming from. It's a run-first kind of defender that doesn't have as much production as a pass rusher, but I think some of that's just what Georgia asked him to do, and I think that he could be a pretty effective edge rusher. So that's somebody that you might want to identify, and if there are guys that, you know, might sneak into that first round, if Washington is taking a look at guys that, you know, on these big boards and mock drafts isn't necessarily always in the first round but could turn out to be one of the better players in the class, the Boston College edge rusher Donovan Isaraku, who is really, really talented, and super athletic. And I think, personally, I think that he should be a little bit higher up in a lot of these boards, but sometimes you don't even see him in the first round. And I think some of those are size concerns. But to me, I think he overcomes them because he's gone up against competition against these really long, big tackles, and he's still produced.
You mentioned if you are comfortable with .. with like Green and Pierce. What's the baggage? Tell people about the backgrounds on those guys.
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with Pierce because it's just a little bit easier to discuss. But Pierce is just, you know, the book on him is that he's kind of just a bad teammate. You know, that, you know, just like with Walter Nolan, somebody that doesn't practice that hard, somebody that wasn't as serious about his development and his practice habits, somebody that didn't interact well in the locker room. Like, it's not just that, you know, he doesn't work as hard, but that he just didn't get, you know, the respect of his teammates just from the way that he's interacted with them and stuff like that. So that's somebody that, you know, you'll have to be convinced loves football. You have to be convinced is going to get along with his teammates and stuff like that. That's just kind of basic locker room stuff. Like, maybe football is just not for him, even though he's got, you know, the kind of build and body that you would hope that he'd be able to dedicate himself to football. With Mike Green, there have been a series of allegations, sexual assault allegations, once when he was in high school and then once when he was in college. He mentioned at the combine, and he did take these allegations on head on. He talked about it directly at the combine. I wonder, you know, whether or not, you know, his agent told him not to, but, you know, it sounds like some people were impressed with the way he handled it. Either way, he'd indicated that neither of those allegations had risen to the level of a criminal charge or a civil suit. And so, you know, his argument, of course, is that, you know, both of these instances, you know, never happened and that they're inflated circumstances. And this is just something where you'd be really comfortable as an NFL team with your investigative unit, because they all have private investigation units nowadays, to kind of see what happened. But they did rise to the level of a campus complaint. There's a lot of uncertainty with what happened at Virginia with Mike Green and whether or not, you know, there was some kind of, like, at the time, a lot of people were convinced that maybe it was a false allegation. Now people are maybe not so sure that it was as false as people initially thought. So there's a lot of uncertainty with that one.
Arif Hasan with us here on G&D. Give me the position group where there might be some great value in the middle rounds. I mean, I think about this all the time, the scarcity of some of these elite guys. Like, if you're drafting Ashton Gentry in the top 10, you know, would you be better off, I'm just sort of making this up, with Caleb Johnson in the third round or something to that effect, that sort of gap between those two guys? Is it worth selecting someone, you know, 50, 60, 70 picks earlier? Give me a spot that you think there's good value in the mid rounds here, Arif.
Yeah, I think the defensive tackle group, like, once you get to the end of the third round, beginning of the fourth round, you're probably going to find some guys like a Shamar Turner, you know, Shamar Stewart's teammate over at Texas A&M, Joshua Farmer from Florida State, Omar Norman Lott from Tennessee. These are all SEC pass rushing, you know, defensive tackles that have done a really, really good job of, you know, producing in some ways that maybe a lot of people don't expect. Some of them don't have the athletic profile that you hope work in the NFL, but at some point, production kind of deserves a little bit of attention. And then at nose tackle, there are a lot of bodies there. Somebody like a Deion Walker, who is massive. He's like 6'7". He's a huge defensive tackle. Personally, I don't think that he loves football. I don't think that he adapts very well. I personally wouldn't draft him, but a lot of teams are in love with his size. But there are other nose tackles that are kind of interesting. And the complete opposite end is somebody like a C.J. West, who is barely 6 feet tall. So you've got this 6'7 nose tackle, the 6 foot tall nose tackle. C.J. West, I think, is a spark plug. He does a really, really good job of using his size and holding down the run. And then in between, you've got somebody like Jamari Caldwell, also at nose tackle. Ty Robinson, also a potential mid-rounder pass rushing tackle. Jordan Phillips from Maryland had a good showing in the All-Star circuit defensive tackle. These are all guys I would expect to go in the third and fourth round, and that is a pretty deep group. As always, wide receiver, you can always find, you know, some pretty good talent depending on how good you are at evaluating. Some pretty good talent. People like Torrey Horton. There's some talk that Isaiah Bond might fall all the way down to the third, fourth rounds. Kyle Williams from Washington State's a guy I really like a lot, depending on how comfortable you are only having, you know, him in the slot or something like that. But yeah, the skill positions are areas where you always have some opportunities, but I think kind of uniquely the defensive tackle group in the middle rounds is something that you can get a lot of value out of.
Arif Hasan is with us looking ahead to tomorrow night's first round in the NFL draft. So based on how you see things falling, walk us through Washington's options, what you like and don't like for them at 29.
Yeah, I think grabbing the Boston College edge rusher, Donovan, I think would be a really good spot for him. But if we do end up in a scenario where, because of trade downs and because, you know, people like these quarterbacks a lot, maybe somebody like a Jalen Milrow or Jackson Dart, you know, gets snuck in the first round, you'll see some of these positions that Washington does need a little bit more investment in, you know, fall a little bit, whether that's edge rusher or cornerback or whatever, I think that you could end up in a situation where if you're comfortable with the off-field for Mike Green, you'll end up with a really talented edge rusher. If you're comfortable with the practice habits for James Pierce, you'll end up with a really talented edge rusher. And maybe you don't want to answer those questions. Maybe you'll end up with Mikel Williams, who's been pretty productive in his kind of six technique spot. I think that those are all scenarios where you can be pretty happy so long as you answer a couple of questions with who you have. But at cornerback, I think depending on how comfortable your medical team is with, like, say, Savon Revelle, who had an ACL tear last season, you know, I think he's a first-round guy. I know a lot of people have him in the second round, but I think that's primarily injury concerns. And so if you've cleared him from an injury perspective, I think, you know, he could be, you know, I know he's a small school guy from East Carolina, but he could be as big of an impact as Quinyon Mitchell was, another small school guy, was for Philadelphia. Right. And I think that you'll end up in a situation where you've got a really aggressive corner that's willing to defend against the run. And I think Washington could really use somebody like that. So I think those are all pretty good scenarios. In my latest kind of, I was playing around with the experiments and mock drafts. I did match Amike Buka with Washington. I know that wide receiver is not the top need, but I think it would be kind of a fun pairing with Scary Terry and Jane Daniels and just get that offense really going. So you could go outside of the need profile and still grab a guy that's going to help the team out a lot.
Arif, great info, man. Really appreciate it. Good content as well, and enjoy the draft tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Arif Hassan, check him out. Wide left football on the NFL draft. Egbuka, he throws out at the end there. Wide receiver to Washington at 29. I'm not saying this is how you should do the draft. In fact, I would say it is exactly how you shouldn't do the draft. But it is amazing the difference, I think, at our draft party and the reaction probably in terms of interest and excitement from fans. If they go with an edge, like the fifth or sixth best guy in the country, versus if they're going to, you know, if they were to take Trevion Henderson, the running back, or Egbuka, the wide receiver, and the jersey sales and the giddiness, it's just, it's a weapon.
Yeah.
There's some juice that
comes
with
juice,
that.
There's always juice, yeah.
And there's just going to be a pizzazz, I think, that would make for a pretty fun next couple of days.
Yeah, sometimes it's, you know, when people look at and they do draft grades a lot of times, right, these are based on one of a couple things. It's, did the team fill its needs, even though we always talk about best available over specific need and reaching, or did they closely follow the mock or the grades that people had prior, which has no reflection on what the team's actual grades were? So it's always kind of silly to do, but that's part of the point here, is everybody's looking at some of the spots, and they might go, what do you mean they didn't draft an edge? What do you mean they didn't draft a corner? Because, you know, their view of the team might be different. And then you combine that with, to your point, oh, my God, it's a new toy. My new fantasy football draft. I can't wait to get this guy if he's a running back 200 touches or if it's Egbuka, you know, 55 catches, 60 catches, and stuff like that. So it's always kind of interesting where excitement comes when we have no data other than stuff that's long in the bank.
Adam Peters answered a question yesterday about the first round edges in this class and what he thinks about them and how they could fit with Washington. We'll play that for you and discuss it next as we take you up to game two, Caps Canadians tonight. Nats baseball against the Orioles this evening as well. And, of course, tomorrow's NFL draft. There is a ton going on. This is one of those great weeks in D.C. sports. We're at City Tap House in Penn Quarter. As you get out of the office, come on down and come on by. We're going to be hanging out with listeners until 6:30. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
I'm Toby Altizer with your sports update on The Fan, and this update is driven by Oarsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together. In hockey tonight, game two for the Capitals. They take on the Canadiens. They lead the series 1-0 after a 3-2 overtime win in game one of the series on Monday night. 7 p.m. puck drop at Capital One Arena. can hear that game right here on 106.7 The Fan. In baseball, the Nationals taking on the Orioles game 2 of the series at Nationals Park. 6:45 first pitch. Can hear that game over on the Team 980. Trevor Williams taking the hill for the Nationals. He's 1-2 with a 5.95 ERA. He'll take on Tomoyuki Sugano, who is 2-1 with a 3.43 ERA. He's on the hill for the Birds. Horseman Fairfax Toyota keeps their customers happy by offering great deals in the area's best selection of new Toyotas, each backed by the Horseman Lifetime Edge, featuring up to $1,500 in extras, as they say to Horseman Fairfax Toyota, let's ride together. From the Crop Medcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm Toby Altizer on The Fan.
Friends in D.C., the Caps. Congratulations on the win last night. Congratulations to our friend Spencer, and best of luck to them and Ovi. That was incredible last night. I've become a huge Caps fan since I've been here, so best of luck to them.
That was GM Adam Peters of the Commanders ahead of his draft press conference yesterday, giving some love to the Capitals. We are downtown at Penn Quarter, where we're near the arena. Game 2 tonight, Caps-Canadians. We're going to be throwing a little party leading up to puck drop here as people get out of the office, get down here rocking their red this afternoon into the evening. Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. He was flanked yesterday, Peters was, by Lance Newmark, his assistant general manager, who is actually a huge Capitals fan. In fact, Newmark is not from the area. I think he told me he grew up in California. But for whatever reason, when he was in California many, many years ago, he became a big Capitals fan, and that's like his favorite team to root for as a guy in sports.
It's like one of the strangest connections ever, by the way.
Yeah, because he was in Detroit for 20-plus years, yeah. Right? And I'm sure he liked hockey, and I'm sure he went to Red Wings games. But I bumped into him at a game one time and introduced myself, and he had happened to watch a lot of some of the Caps coverage over the years, but just a huge Caps fan. So it was kind of cool to see him up there yesterday talking about the Caps and Ovi as well. But he mentioned, Peters did, Spencer Carberry there, our friend Spencer. I didn't get to hear Carbs' pregame today, Danny. Mm-hmm. What were his keys to the game?
Obviously, Montreal presents a great number of challenges for us. That's a good hockey club over there. You've got to go out and establish who you are in the first 10 minutes, withstand their charge. They're going to be desperate, obviously, be accountable with all the pucks in and out of the neutral zone. Get the puck deep, traffic in front of the net, grind away your shifts, minute to minute, tape to tape. Let's get ourselves, a nice 60-minute effort. We'll go from there.
I need something about, like, Ovi, big man, or O.
And O, obviously,
like
getting us started.
Into the fight.
Yeah, when you've got a presence like that, you've obviously got to make sure he's well-fed. And, have an O get us off to that rip-roaring start. It wasn't just the shots on goal. Those are nice. But have an O just hit everything that moves. I mean, a couple times on the bench, we were ducking because we thought he was going to come after us. But just the intensity that he brings at 48 years old or whatever he is at this time, it's just incredible.
And is your coach of the year very likely in the National Hockey League,
please,
Spencer?
Thank you.
Carberry. All right, let's hear some Peters from yesterday. I got a couple of things I wanted to react to. We played the press conference back end of the show, and then we gave some thoughts, but getting to really dissect it, go back through and listen to everything last night, I jotted some things down. So I want to start with the edge position and the question to Peters about the defensive ends in this class, how they could fit for what Washington's looking for.
Yeah, it's a deep class, which is cool. There's something, I think, for everybody, whether you're a 4-3, 3-4 team or multiple. There's guys that are great against the pass. There are guys that are really good against the run. So whether you're taking that high in the draft or somewhere deeper, there's going to be some good players there. So that, along with a lot of other positions, will be open to taking. And I think what's cool is even though we have some really good players in each of those rooms, whether it's edge or O-line or corner, which I'm sure you guys are going to ask about that too, but we have really good players, but we really – DQ preaches competition. So those guys are going to come in and compete, and the best guys are going to play. And the more good player – you can't have too many good players in a room, I guess.
Peters is never going to give you the blueprint. He's not going to say a whole lot in terms of what ways they're leaning. But if you kind of read how he's talking, he will give you little morsels. And what I got out of that was that they do like the group they have, a little bit too. You know, we have been dismissive. I don't mean you and I, although we have too. But collectively, I think the media, the fan base in town, we've been dismissive of their current DN group as the possible group going into the season. You know, you could add someone in the mid to late rounds, and that doesn't affect it that much. But I'm talking about Dorrance Armstrong, who's a starter. Maybe it's Dietrich Wise, who comes over from New England. Jacob Martin, they signed from the Bears. I view him as a guy that may or may not make the team. Maybe they have bigger role planned for him. You're thinking about, like, Cleland Farrell, who was hurt last year, but maybe they think if he was healthy and on the field, they'd stop the run better. They drafted Javonte Jean-Baptiste out of Notre Dame last year by way of Ohio State, former seventh-round pick. Maybe they liked what they saw. He got hurt as well. Jalen Holmes is another guy that comes to mind. They still have Andre Jones, the former seventh-round pick, 2 years ago, who's been in the program. So he talks as if we got a bunch of guys ready to compete. We feel okay. I think that's just coach speak. I think he's just saying that publicly they like their guys, which is what a GM should say. I just don't believe it. I think you need still a 10-sack player. Armstrong might be an 8-sack guy, Danny. Wise at this point of his career is maybe a 5- or 6-sack guy. Farrell's probably a 3-sack guy. I don't think Martin's even that. I don't know how you go into the year and get enough pressure and enough sacks and enough hits on the quarterback without adding one more legitimate edge piece.
So that's what it looks like on paper to me. That my, you know, I'm not a GM, but my eyes tell you the same thing that everyone else's does, right? Like you read that roster, you read that depth chart wherever you go, and you'd go, well, there's the weak link. It's obvious. It's right there. You lost a guy that wasn't really a positive asset for you on running downs. That was your best pass rusher this past year in Dante Fowler. You have not replaced that yet. In their minds, maybe they have replaced it, whether it's a healthy Farrell, you mentioned Wise, whether it's Eddie Goldman, or who knows what they're thinking there. So last year, going into the draft, going into training camp, regular season, etc., several times over, several different positions, I go, I just can't believe they're rolling with this. Now, they know better than I do, right? And there were sometimes it was either worked around or it was better than people like me thought or whatever. And I've been kind of hitting it and asking that question generally over the last several weeks. Like, I go, I wonder if they're going to get safety. Maybe they think Will Harris is it, right? That they're not going to miss Jeremy Chinn. They found Chinn 2.0 in Harris. I go, I think they probably need a corner. Maybe they're going, we got Jonathan Jones and Lattimore's coming back. We'll be great. That's the part that I don't know.
And I think this is how they operate too. It's two straight off seasons of this where there is guesswork on our end because they don't sign obvious starters. They're signing 1 year deals, fairly cheap players typically, which means they're a little bit of a tweener. Now maybe if you get coached up well and you're the perfect fit, you become a quality starter, which happened at a bunch of positions.
Yes, it did.
With some of the guys they signed last year. But to your point, looking at safety for a second, with Will Harris, who comes over from New Orleans, if you were to draft an excellent safety in the first round and then he played behind that guy in Quan Martin as a reserve with Reeves or Percy Butler, that would make perfect sense. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. You didn't pay Will Harris an X amount of money to make him a starter. But you're also in a situation where if you need him to start with Quan Martin, I think that would be okay too. And they did that at so many positions. They actually talked about this a little bit, which we could get into. But this is clearly their paradigm with how they're built right now. What they feel like they have to do is do enough in free agency to give themselves options. This is about them going in different positions in the draft after pieces they get in free agency based on what they do. I think they like the flexibility of saying, all right, it's not now a huge need for safety, but if we could get one and upgrade, we'd like to do it. And that's a lot of spots on the roster you could say that about. This is what Peters had to say about that.
That was the goal of it in free agency, was to do that so we don't have to force something. And I think we put ourselves in a really good position to not force something. And really, we have a lot of players that we think we can take, whether we sit at 29 or trade up, trade back. But we don't have to just say, okay, we need to look at these three, you know, position X's or these two position Y's. We can look at all these guys across the board and say, okay, who's going to help us the most this next year and then for years to come.
I think you have to prepare for every eventuality in the draft. You know, you don't know who you're going to get in free agency. You have goals and you have exciting hopes for guys. And the road, I would say, to the draft changes throughout the course of the scouting year. And we end up at this point where we feel really good about our options. And I think at every pick, We can look at what's who we feel the best players are, what position they play, how they affect us in 2025, how they affect us beyond that, and make the best decision for our organization. And we've already had a lot of really good conversations, and we'll continue to do that. And then pick by pick, what's there for us? What's the best decision, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's great to have that freedom and that, you know, kind of mindset where we can really do what we think is best and not be, you know, really tied to need.
It's exactly what we were just talking about.
Precisely,
and that's Lance Newmark, who we were mentioning, the assistant general manager who came over from the Lions, who does a lot as the right-hand man for Adam Peters. By the way, after playing that clip, it just got me thinking about this. I wanted to shout him out. You heard the full presser yesterday like I did.
Mm-hmm.
He started it by thanking every scout in the organization by name. He then went through, and he did this last year, I remember, as well.
It's a specialty, yeah.
But he went through not only the scouts, but then the R&D department, and then the assistants to all of the various people who are working the long hours. He talked about the names of the people that make the food in the cafeteria. I mean, like, literally, piece by piece in the organization, all the way to the public relations director, Sean DeBarbieri, that was standing next to him. And I bring this up to say, this is not a 20-year executive who's got four Super Bowl rings as a GM, who's been a lifer in this role. This is a first-time GM. Now, he's playing with some house money this year because he just got to the NFC Championship game in year one. But in some ways, still trying to prove himself as being really good. I think a lot of us perceive that he is. But even last year, before he'd ever done a draft, he was doing this.
Yep.
And I think the comfort in your own skin to deflect before the biggest weekend of the year that's all about you as a general manager to other people. Not every GM's doing that. He's got Newmark sitting next to him answering questions, and then he's telling you how good Lance is and how these guys are responsible for this. And when they sign certain players, he says, "No, I want to thank so-and-so for their work because without him, we wouldn't have gotten this deal done." I just think for a young GM, that is an awesome leadership trait.
It is a tremendous leadership trait. Stole the word out of my mouth. It makes people want to come to work. You know, we've all been in places. Every one of us has dealt with it, right? Where that boss, whenever there's something bad happened, he's running you under the bus. Whenever something good happens, he's up there glory hogging and taking all the credit. Everyone's dealt with that. In every walk of life, everybody has. The opposite, when somebody has enough confidence in themselves to not necessarily seek the credit out, but you take all the blame when it's bad, and you go, hey, we should have done that, or I should have done this better, et cetera. Like we want quarterbacks to do at the podium. And you give shine to everybody else who works hard. And it gets people to buy in. It gets people knowing that their, A, hard work gets recognized, but, B, that they'll be rewarded in some way, right? Whether it's not here anymore, whether you become a hot GM candidate or the next head scout of a rival team, you build that kind of culture, it gets people to want to come to work every day and do their best, not just cover their butts. For years, one of the hallmarks under Snyder and Bruce Allen and other boobs that were overmatched and shouldn't have been in any kind of seat, let alone in charge of an NFL franchise, is everybody was scurrying. The instant it started to go south, the leaks would come out. And, well, this one wasn't my fault. That was a Bruce Allen mastermind, or he did this, or I did that. Or, you know, they go 9-7, and everybody's mad that Scott McClune was getting too much credit for a team that went 8-7-1. It's pathetic. And that's over now. And that's, to me, his best asset to this point.
We're at City Tap House today, getting ready for the Caps and the Canadians, getting closer and closer to puck drop, coming up on about 3 hours and 25 minutes away from the game getting going. I actually bumped into one of the servers here who came up to me and said, "You were talking about the 99 Redskins." I said, "Yeah." He said, "That's my favorite team ever as well."
Oh, wow.
He's 33 years old. And he remembers being at the Carolina game that year. I think it was a 38-36 final where Washington was down like 21-0 and was able to come back in that game and get a win. But this is a cool little sports spot. Great TVs. Well, we got some baseball on right now. But the food is delicious. The drinks will quench that thirst beautifully.
Indeed.
They are cold. And if you like alcohol, they got all of it.
They have adult sodas.
Yes.
So it's the kind of thing you have to be of legal age to drink. I looked that up. And if you are, you're allowed to have them. You just have them. You can have alcohol.
Our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Game two tonight, Caps Canadians, just after 7 o'clock. We are your pregame. Go vote on our Grant and Danny poll of the day on the 106.7 The Fan Twitter account right now, presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage. A little over 24 hours away from the start of the NFL draft. What position do you think the Commanders ultimately address with the 29th pick? Let's say they stick and they make a pick. Edge rusher, wide receiver, defensive back, or running back? I actually voted for defensive back. As much as I want them to draft an edge, I just worry that the board won't fall in their favor. So I went defensive back. We'll see what Danny thinks in just a bit. But go vote. Again, on Twitter, it's the 106.7 The Fan, Grant and Danny, poll of the day, brought to you by Metropolitan Moving and Storage. I was just chatting with some listeners at the bar. Diana is here, and she's going to her very first Capitals game ever tonight.
Oh, hello there.
For game two of a playoff series.
That ain't bad.
Against Montreal at home, and I told her, and I mean this, I said, Diana, I am so jealous that this will be your first hockey experience. Mm-hmm. Getting to see a movie you've never seen before.
Right.
And everyone else around you seen it and knows it's one of the greatest movies ever and you want to relive the first time you saw it.
I want to feel that first time again.
Come on, man. I mean, in this atmosphere, and I don't want to oversell it, but I don't think I can. Everyone's wearing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's very loud.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck topping this.
Pretty much covers it, actually, yeah.
It's... Like, I thought the Nats game last night was great. They were at the Nats game last night. And they had a good time, I'm sure. They won 7-0. They out at the Orioles 14-1. That was adorable. Tonight's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's like saying I climbed up the hill in my neighborhood or I'm climbing Everest. But, you know, I mean, you're both going uphill, but it's a different level. I mean, it's playoff hockey, for goodness sakes, in this barn that gets a little loud.
Craig Lachlan is going to be on the show with us at 5 o'clock, an hour and 15 minutes or so from right now. Locker with his preview for Game 2, his assessment of the Caps. We will paint the show red in our final hour or so as folks are traversing to Capital One Arena. So make sure you're listening for Locker coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Jeeps, you know I'm not a wrestling guy. It's not really for me. I did it. I did my time. It just the everything's different now, and it just doesn't feel as much fun. I haven't sat down and watched wrestling or gone to an event or whatever. I went with a buddy of mine like 20 years ago, and I kind of was like, this isn't fun anymore.
How have your kids not gotten into it a little bit?
Well,
that shocks me because you got two boys.
You just jumped to the conclusion,
okay.
My friend. WrestleMania was on in the Hooray household this weekend, and my 11-year-old was losing his mind. He's all in. I don't know when it happened exactly, but he did that thing that, you know, when kids start to mature, they do this bit where they come to you with like an offer, right? And now it's a terrible offer for you because you're going to bear all the expense and deal with the pain in the butt, but they've like rationed it out in their mind. So he's like, we could get Peacock Plus and then have that. And, like, now we have Peacock Plus, and we could watch WrestleMania. Like, that was his grand plan, where it's like, okay, so what actually happens is now we have another subscription, and all I try to do is cancel these things.
Did you not have Peacock yet?
We had Peacock at one point via trial because of the cable company.
But you had to get Peacock
this weekend. We had to get Peacock Plus this weekend to let him watch. And he was, like, into something, excited about it, that's not video games. I'm like, yep, sure, let's go. Happy to do it. So we now have Peacock Plus is like, the net of the story. But he did that thing where he's, like, thought he was being responsible. Where he's, like, so, you know, it'll cost you a fee, and you'll never be able to cancel, and it's going to be impossible for you to deal with, and it'll annoy you a bunch, but we could do that. Like, as if like that was his proposal. So we got it, and we were watching wrestling. I didn't know who anybody was. And they, of course, had to go to bed before the main event, before the John Cena thing with Travis Scott.
He could go back and watch it all.
Yeah, which I'm sure he already has. I mean, he knows where to find all the things and how to do it. But, yeah.
See, so Cody Rhodes guy, he's got to be disappointed about Cena breaking the record with another championship.
I don't know if he was disappointed or not.
Okay.
I think he likes Cena.
I don't think so.
I think he
not
likes
right
Cena.
Now he doesn't. Cena's a heel.
But I think he likes Cena. Because Cena was in a movie called Playing with Fire, where he plays a firefighter.
Okay. I'm going to defer to you.
I mean,
you were with him.
I don't know.
The whole point of Cena right now is that everyone's supposed to hate him. So that's a choice. If he was rooting for Cena over Cody Rhodes, babyface Cody Rhodes.
I don't know, man.
We're all humming his music as he's walking to the ring. He's hugging and kissing people.
Is he more high profile than the Street Profits?
Oh my God! It's not even close.
So where, like, so
I think
how close?
If the Street Profits were at WrestleMania, they were sitting in the crowd. I mean, John Cena was main eventing with the Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, so we didn't get that to that part, but we watched. There was a.
So did you watch Raw after Mania when Cena got RKO'd by Randy Orton?
I think he did.
Voices in my head.
I think he did. So he and my 7-year-old were recreating Randy Orton's win against some jobber, some nubber.
Oh, it was a great bit. I don't know this guy, so this is where my
right.
Like you're as what are you 1 to 100 on a wrestling?
Zero. Right okay. Now, I don't know anybody.
So you're a zero.
Well, actually, that's not true. I know John Cena.
I'd say I'm like a 35.
Okay.
Maybe a 40.
Yeah.
This is where I'm going to get exposed as a 40.
Okay.
And someone who's an 80 is going to be like, "Come on!" But there's this guy. I believe he's from either. It's not
like
AEW.
Ireland or
it's Scotland? TNA. I think.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's not even AEW.
Okay.
But his bit is like he does this big smile and the camera zooms in on him. So he did this really funny bit where he like flips his head around and he's smiling at the camera and they shot it beautifully so that you just see him doing the smile and then he gets RKO'd by Randy.
Yeah, so I didn't know the move was called the RKO, but that whatever that was, my kids thought that was the greatest thing of all time.
Oh, it was the greatest thing
like
of all time.
Because the way the angle worked, it was perfect. This dude is just like cheesing for the camera and you don't see Orton get back up because he'd gotten knocked down.
Right.
And he comes flying in, and this guy's dumb face just gets mushed.
It was shot that way.
Yeah.
So perfect.
It was perfect.
So you know about the RKO, respectfully, because
I don't.
It's the viral social media thing for years and years that everyone – you know how someone like will try to like dunk on their buddy if there's a basketball hoop on the wall around? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
So the same thing happens with the RKO, like around pools or whatever, where if someone's standing there, you just grab them by the neck and like pull them in. That's RKO. Do you know what I'm referencing? It's a long-time viral thing.
You're dragging someone into the pool with you.
But you thought they were doing that, but they were RKOing them.
I see.
My
point is I didn't know what that was.
Exactly.
People say RKO, and I'm okay.
We don't do this because we're grown-ups, but like I remember in high school you would do this. You would like get on all fours behind your buddy.
Tabletop.
Someone would push him.
Yeah, you tabletop.
Right. That bit is like people are doing the RKO the same way you would do that.
Gotcha.
Darius, can you grab me? Randy Orton's theme music, I Hear Voices in My Head. I've had that stuck in my head. I don't even know why.
Fittingly, yeah.
For like weeks. I think it might be the one seed wrestling intro song.
Oh.
Because here's what I've realized with that song. I think what you need, remember Stone Cold's Shattered Glass?
Yeah.
You need, the first note is the whole point. Because a lot of times it's quiet, it's out of commercial, we're leading off Raw, we're, you know, it's the Rumble, it's 3, 2, 1, we're looking down the long ramp or whatever, and you need that first note. Randy Orton's song starts with, like, badass lyrics where it's like, they call him the, is it the Viper, I think they call him? But he's like, his shtick has always been, he's this sadistic guy and he has voices in his head.
I see.
And
so not to the Al Snow crazy level.
No. He's not weird. Like that. I mean, it's more just like, you don't know what he's going to do. This guy's wild and
he's
crazy.
He's so wild.
And angry, and he's going to get the better of you, and you better hope he's not listening to the bad version of him.
He might, yeah.
But it starts with, I hear voices in my head. Silly. Dad, you got it? What are we doing here? Nothing? Nobody?
Nope.
Okay.
He doesn't have it.
No problem. It's just... just a song I got stuck in my head.
So. Well, but can you just sing it? How does the whole thing go?
I've done it a few times. Yeah. I think we're good now.
I only know that part. I hear voices in my head.
That'll do it for me for now. The Beltway Blitz is next, Danny. We will get you the latest on the Caps. Katie Florio of the Caps Radio Network. The Nats, our buddy Dave Jagler of the Nationals Radio Network. And the Commanders, our buddy Chris Russell on the draft tomorrow. You're listening to The Fan.